This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today with
Sophie. And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
It's Pick Six with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top six sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick Six with Mully and Haw starts now.
How important has Matt Boyd been for the Cubs through the first month of the season? Are there any concerns about usage for Boyd, whose health has limited his availability in the last couple of seasons? Where do you slot him in is this Cubs rotation at this point?
Yeah, you know, I think he's been a huge blessing. I mean, I don't know that you were going to need him as quickly and for as consistent as he's been. He's been very good. And you love seeing the guy take the ball. You know, as far as health stuff is concerned, you gotta just stay with it and keep hoping and kind of line the guy up and just keep him in this spot in the rotation and not worry about it. There's nothing else you can do other than react if indeed something does go wrong. But, you know, every year is different and there are different reasons why things happen, and he's a couple years removed from a serious problem. So you just kind of hope that he's getting better and he's going to have this kind of year, and he's having an excellent year. But I don't know. I think you deal with things as they happen. I don't think you can pre-plan for something like that. You like to have cover. You like to, but you've already pushed that, right? Now you're hoping that Colin Rea is a guy that also can hold up and be as good as he's been, etc. You know, the news isn't getting better. The news was pretty bad yesterday in terms of the Cubs pitching. So you just want to kind of stay with it and hope for the best, and you'll react and deal with it if something goes awry.
Yeah, he's been better than I thought. You always like to have a good lefty out there, right? Mm-hmm. And he's I like him a lot. He's good with the media. He's been good so far. Mully, you make a good point about the tread on the tire, right? But again, he's a little older in age, but missing time kind of makes the arm potentially a little fresher. I mean, listen, the Cubs bullpen is still an issue. Even John Heyman the other day with you guys said as bad as third base has been for the Cubs, and we'll get into that more this morning, I'm sure, that the real issue is going to be that the B team, the JV squad part of the Cubs bullpen, not good enough. So you're stretching out your pitchers a little bit more.
He's been as steady as I think you would have hoped Justin Steele would be if he were healthy. He has been very good, better than I expected. And he is your second most dependable starter right now. I would have to say that you have a feeling of confidence when he takes the mound. And he had it last night. He's 2-2 with a 2.7 ERA, made six starts, and he's pitched 33 innings, 33 and a third. Last year, he pitched 39 innings total and made eight starts. So I want to enjoy this without worry, and I think the Cubs are probably in the same situation. But when you look at his track record, you do really, really hope he stays healthy, and you wonder about what happens in another month. Today is May 1st. So we're a month into the season. There's a long way to go. And you look at the last five seasons for Matthew Boyd, 2024, 39 innings, 2023, 71, 2022-13, 2021-78, 2020-60. Back in 2019 is the last time he cracked 100, 185 innings. So there's a long way to go. May he stay healthy and get the ball every fifth day. I think if he can stay on the mound every fifth day, he's going to establish himself as the second most reliable starter on this team, and he's going to be a big asset down the stretch.
So when you just asked that question, I started racking my brain. Off the top of my head, I don't even know.
That's the voice of Tommy Hotovy. He's with you guys 7:25 this morning. How disappointing was it to see and hear that Javier Assad has been put on the 60-day IL? Does it underscore the fact that the Cubs still need to strengthen their rotation from outside the organization before the season is over? Does the Chris Flexen call-up do anything for you?
Yes, it does. I think Chris Flexen is somebody who, over the last couple months, has found something that has been working, unlike it did a year ago for the White Sox. He struggled a lot last year. He was, at one point in time, making history for going consecutive outings without a victory. Was that, or consecutive losses? I'd have to look up the record for futility, but I think I have forgotten it just because you block out that part of the season. But Chris Flexen is a pro that offers you versatility.
He ate a ton of innings for that horrible team last
year. He did. And yeah. I think that sometimes gets overlooked, Molly, because do you hold it against him that his team couldn't hit, or that the bullpen couldn't do what they
or that that manager couldn't figure out anything?
So I think Chris Flexen is somebody who can serve a purpose in this Cub bullpen that needs professionals to eat innings. I think it's a welcome addition. I think it could be a sneaky good move. So I feel bad about Javier Assad. Certainly you were counting on him, but he's yet to contribute. So it's not as if you're having to take away something that you were counting on. You've really never had it.
I hope it is a sneaky good move, as you just put it, David. That was well said. There was a report towards the end of our show that this was percolating, that this was brewing. And then the question was, first reaction, well, does this have something to do with Shota? And then it was, no, this doesn't have something to do with Shota. Yeah. So then you wondered, okay, well, what does it have to deal with? And now we know it has to deal with that the oblique's not getting better for Assad. And that's unfortunate because I'd have to dig into the numbers, but if memory serves, he seemed like a guy that was able to come out of the bullpen, Javier Assad, and start. Jordan Wicks was a disaster when they gave him the opportunity to come out of the bullpen, and Assad was able to do that. So yes. I was thinking that, that might be his role when he got back. So I'm disappointed, and as David said, I think very well, a sneaky good move, let's hope.
I thought it was a sneaky good move when they signed him, and I think we talked about this. I also like the idea of a guy doing well at AAA, and you respond to it. And you bring him up. And it's interesting because I heard Craig Counsell speak before the game yesterday, and he was asked about Moises Ballesteros, and it doesn't matter how well he's hitting. They're aware of it. They know about it, but they don't need him right now. And so they're just going to wait. And certainly they're aware. He talked about the fact that there's no opening. You know, there is no need to bring him up right now. But they're aware of what he's doing, and you know, if there is an opening, they know they can count on him. This one's a little bit different. This is an area where they can use some help, and this is a guy that can provide you with some help. So that was good. The Assad thing is awful because that's one of the guys you were thinking about as a replacement player, as a guy that, how isn't he on the way too? They got this, they got that. Isn't he on the way? Oh, yeah, he's got a big start down in Iowa. Oh, he didn't do too well in that start. And then you go another week, and now all of a sudden he's on the 60-day IL. That would tell you, not this year, son, right? He's not really coming back at all. A couple months is a lifetime in baseball.
It is.
And, you know, who knows if he can come back at the end of the year, but that is disappointing that he's not on the way anymore.
Just some real quick fun with numbers. When you look at last year and you're comparing, we're talking about Assad and we're talking about Flexen, his virtual replacement, essentially. Last year, Assad was 7-6 in 29 starts, and he had a 1.7 WAR.
Right.
We use WAR a lot to measure, according to Baseball Reference. Chris Flexen was 3-15, but he made 30 starts for the White Sox.
Yes.
His WAR was 1.6. So he was a 1-6 WAR player with that record, and Assad was a 1-7 WAR player in his performance for the Cubs. It just shows you that Chris Flexen was a victim of being on a bad, terrible team.
But he took the ball and he started all those games.
And he was a professional.
And he, you know, and didn't he go 14 games without getting a win or something? It was awful.
He was 3-15 overall.
Yeah, but it was awful. He went a long time without anything. And, you know, I can't imagine what that's like going out every day knowing you're done.
Wow. You know, it's a scary good question, right?
Voice of Bruce Levine, he's going to be joining us before 10 o'clock this morning. What did you make of our guy, Bruce Levine, making the point on the Marquee Sports Network that the Cubs World Series window is basically a two-year window? Obviously, Kyle Tucker is up after this year, along with closer Ryan Pressly. But after 2026, Happ, Horner, Suzuki, Tyone, Boyd, Kelly, they're all up too. The Cubs can extend Shota Imanaga after 25. Is this the reality of an expiring collective bargaining agreement?
Yeah, they can extend Shota after 25 or 26, and you know that they're kind of in control of that contract. But yeah, it tells you that they're aware of the collective bargaining agreement expiring. And we'll talk to Bruce a little bit later in the program, and I'm fascinated to get his take on that because I think. You know, there's part of the thinking has always been, you know, 90 wins or bust. This is their year. They got to do it. They've got the certainty of Kyle Tucker for only this year. And even if they get that beyond this year, then you're gonna have to start worrying about some of these other guys. It is there's a lot of guys on the way. They've built this thing up so that you know that there is a whole group of. Stars in the minor leagues, but we know how that stuff works too. Mm-hmm. That's a risky little if come sort of deal, and maybe that's their plan, maybe it isn't, but they're well aware of when the collective bargaining agreement is, and they kind of have set this up to prevent themselves from getting bitten pretty badly.
Yeah, it's a great observation by Bruce. And I think it does make a lot of sense that everybody knew when the bargaining agreement was going to run out. I guess 5 years ago, you didn't know that there'd be a work stoppage. Like they're leaning that way at this moment. They're saying prepare as if there is going to be such a stoppage. But they also created this group together and said, all right, this is hopefully the group of the next Cubs playoff team, meaning Happ, Horner, Suzuki, Tyone, like that first couple of guys on this list, that was kind of that group that you were putting out there to take care of this, and so far they have not been able to do it.
Yeah, I don't agree with Bruce. I don't agree with it. I think 2 years is an odd window size. I think when you look at the Cubs and the way they've replenished this farm system and built it up, you're not looking at this as far as 2 years. I think it's either you're looking at it, go for it all this year because of the Kyle Tucker reality. And then if you lose Kyle Tucker, you try to keep that World Series window open by replacing him with a lot with maybe two players for one and then relying on this farm system you're so proud of and leaning on the pitching that is being developed. A guy like Cade Horton, for instance, that we didn't mention in the previous question, but might be the answer to a lot of questions. So I'm very curious to see, and I didn't see Bruce's report, but the two-year size of the World Series window is a little baffling to me because I do think it's either this year or you take a deep breath, you take a step back, and you retool for the next 3 to 5. And they have a farm system good enough, I think, to make that realistic. The contract realities of Shota and some of the other guys are there, but I don't feel that sense of urgency. What I do think is urgent is the need to win the division, get back to the playoffs this year while you have Kyle Tucker. And then if you're in the playoffs, you have that World Series window wide open because anything could happen in October, and that's the way I think you have to look at it. So if this helps them operate with a sense of urgency, great. I think the potential work stoppage looms for everybody.
That's another really good question.
What did you think of the White Sox starter Shane Smith's performance against the Brewers, the team that left him unprotected in the Rule 5 draft and likely regrets it? Does Smith's emergence make the Sox any more watchable?
Well, I don't know if they do, if it does that, but I do think that he is a guy that you root for, you respect, and it makes his starts more watchable. He's clean. He's focused. He is intense. I think that you always find yourself. I found myself last night because of how much we have learned about the changeup he developed, wondering when he's going to use it and how it's going to look. So when you have so few bright spots on a team that's in the midst of another dismal season, I think that you really try to make the most of those opportunities. So every fifth day, I do think that Shane Smith, from the White Sox perspective, is must-watch.
No, Smith does not make the Sox more watchable. I mean, he's fine on most other teams. He looks better on this team. But, I mean, what are the Brewers missing out on? Their fifth starter with Shane? Okay, great.
You don't think they regret losing him? You don't think they looked at him last night in the mound and thought, wow, we could use him?
Sure.
He went five innings. He scattered six hits, gave up an earned run, walked three, struck out four. The Sox don't have much. They don't have great pitching. They've been really solid, and they've done a good job using openers. Obviously, they put the lefty. They sent him back down. The guy that started opened three of those four games in a row, and now they're playing teams that aren't loaded with left-handers, and they're not trying to match it up and worry about it. So you won't see him for a little bit, but I'm sure that will be back. But Shane Smith has done well, and he's been like a surprise player that they got something free for nothing. And they have three Rule 5 players on their roster. Mm. And you heard the Cubs manager, Craig Counsell, say, well, you know, it's unfortunate about Gage Workman because he's a Rule 5 guy, and it's really hard for a Rule 5 guy to make it on a team like ours because they're trying to win right now. And they're worried only about winning right now. The White Sox are desperate to try to build up a roster and be able to play for a couple of years, and they're leaning on Rule 5 guys as a way of sort of stealing draft picks that went asunder. So they're getting other people's players to try to help develop their team because they failed so badly in previous drafts.
He didn't have his best stuff last night?
He did not. He didn't have his best game. But, you know, is he worth watching? I think it's great that somehow he developed his own pitch and that changed him and he's had a better year. I like guys like that. I like stories like that. I get it. You can start out and do well and Major League Baseball will catch up to you because they're monitoring everything and following everything. And, you know, it's difficult to have one over people like he seemed to have with his new pitch, the changeup of sorts. I don't know what you'd call it because it
kick
ball
change
moves kind of a lot. Yeah, yeah.
Is so that they're calling it?
I think that's what they're
that
calling
the cool
it.
Cool kids but, are calling it.
And that's fine, you know, whatever you want to call it. But he did that himself. And now help him out and help him adjust and let's see what he can do. It's a, you know, it was a really good guy to pick up. And they needed him, and he's proven to be pretty good for them.
Did you hear him talk about meeting the scout or being reunited with the scout from Milwaukee that signed him essentially? So that had to be a cool full circle moment
sure.
for the guy.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, look, they're losing games not because of the starting pitching. They're losing games because they can't score runs. And they finally scored four runs, and it's just not enough against a team like Milwaukee that can nickel and dime you to death. And that's kind of what happened in the game.
There's going to be a lot of questions on the draft process.
What did you make of the Falcons defensive coordinator Jeff Ulbrich's apology yesterday over his son Jack Crank call to Shedeur Sanders during the NFL draft? The Falcons, they were fined $250,000 yesterday, while Ulbrich, the father, was fined $100,000 for the incident. The DC said they won't appeal the fine. He takes full responsibility for not protecting the phone numbers. Teaching moment?
Oh, boy. You know, that's a tough moment, man. Right? Do we agree on that? That's awful. $100,000 is a lot of money to people. I don't know how you could not look at it and say, you know, why don't you suspend me a week so I can stay home and just discipline my son? We could, you know, really have a serious conversation, and you're grounded for life. And, you know, $100,000, man. I couldn't imagine what the old man would have done if I had gotten caught with a prank like that. You know, it was Jeff Ulbrich apologized for leaving the material available to a point where it was stolen by his son, and said he's not gonna. They said they apologize for everything, and they're not challenging it, or they won't try to appeal any part of it. They're gonna pay the price and do what they need to do. Did you see that? Apparently, somebody called Abdul Carter. That story came out. He was called when Jacksonville was trading up.
Yeah, there were a couple other prospects, too.
There were
too,
at least four people that I've heard of that were also called. So whatever they were doing, they fouled it up. And if this kid was responsible for all that, then the old man should pay up and just let it go. But if I'm Jax Ulbrich, holy cow. Just keep your head down, son, and go the clean and narrow. And I don't. The guy, you know, talk about pranks going wrong. It's a cautionary tale.
Cautionary tale is a good way to talk about it. You know, keep your head down. Another great way to put it. But is this again? You guys mentioned these other stories. What's not crystal clear was this different cases? Were these his buddies? Were you know? But it goes back to like. It's all about Shedeur Sanders again. You know, like, had this. If you took Shedeur Sanders out of the equation and three other guys got calls, would we be asking this question today? Would there be fines?
Oh, but, yes, of course there would be. Yeah, there would be.
But,
yes, there would be.
But that guy fell at a historic level, right?
So I understand. I guess.
But I think you can't take Shedeur out of it, is what I'm saying, because that is the one. That it wasn't just like, hey, you're going for, you know, you're going one spot later, or you're going three spots. That guy fell rounds. Well, it's awful.
Well, there was more attention paid because it was Shedeur Sanders, but let's be clear about the fine is because this was an exposure of private information.
Personal information, yes. Being shared.
And maybe proprietary information as well. So you can't tolerate that from a league level, from a team level. And so you have to discipline. Once this becomes well known and the act was performed, the hoax was attempted and pulled off, that the other things are interesting, but those are if those are situations where somebody got the information or the numbers from a NFL team's personal computer, then they need to find those teams too.
Yeah.
Find those families too. Jeff Ulbrich did what any dad would have to do. He faced this publicly, and he looked like he was humiliated. And
yes,
you understand that. And it was a tough dad moment. It's been a tough week for sports dads, from Halliburton's pops to Jeff Ulbrich having to take ownership for his son. This is a difficult thing because a lot of people say, well, you know, the dad has as much to do with it as the son because there must not have been some discipline. He left his computer open. And those things are true. So this is a very tough lesson to learn. The young man costing his dad $100,000. I would put him on a repayment plan similar to your student loans.
Wow.
Your own personal in-family Sallie Mae, because he can pay that off one month at a time for a very long time.
When will we find out about any discipline or fine for that incident the other night down in Indiana?
Halliburton.
I don't know. Like, no. What would happen? What
How
would
do
they
you do? Discipline them?
Oh, I mean, no longer allowed to sit that close. Not allowed in the building.
Oh, you mean the next playoff game?
Right. I mean, no more courtside seat.
Yeah.
No more
Are you going to tell the father of your best player, your franchise player, that he can't go
to
the game?
Why I find it so interesting.
You have to move him off the court seats into the first
row. He's got to watch the game.
Yeah, so he has to be put in a suite.
In Bloomington.
This will be a pick six. There's like your ball game.
All right, sorry, guys. I went a little out of order here. After the Bears draft, how would you compare their offensive weapons to other teams in the NFC North? And how much have they closed the gap? Who was the best collection and why?
They've closed the gap. They have closed the gap. You add players of the caliber potentially of Loveland and Burden.
Yeah. Yeah.
You have added two Pro Bowl caliber talents. Can they realize their potential in Ben Johnson's offense? It's a good bet that they will, and if they do, they will give the Bears a legitimate offense, a passing offense to be feared. Yes, to be feared. They're not the Vikings. I think the Vikings have the best collection. I think because of Justin Jefferson, because of Jordan Addison, I think they have the best receiver tandem. Then you throw in the tight end, and it's very dangerous. I think Detroit could make that argument as well. The Bears are in that category. I think the interesting thing when you examine where the NFC North is in terms of weaponry, the Packers, to me, are last. Now, Christian Watson has to get healthy, and maybe when he does, that will be different. And I know they drafted Golden out of Texas, who made his long walk to the podium, and it was everything's green and golden. I know those are fun headlines to write, but I don't think that their weaponry is as good as the rest of the divisions. So the Bears put themselves in a position to have an offense that is feared. It's not the Vikings yet, but it is definitely improved.
Definitely improved. The gap has been closed. This is not your dad's or grandfather's black and blue division anymore, that's for sure. The rough and tumble NFC North. I guess it looks good on paper. It looks good in fantasy football. But what matters is wins and losses, and that's where we've got to see if the gap's been closed.
You know, I think it's fascinating to talk about this because I think that maybe Detroit has the best. They had the best offense. I guess what I'm saying is, are we not counting the offensive line? We're talking about weaponry, so we're only talking about receivers and running backs. And
yes,
but I think their offensive line makes the running back better.
What about play
and
callers?
It makes Jared Goff better. I think if you are right now, just think of it this way. If you're judging the quarterbacks, I think you would go, Jared Goff, Jordan Love, Caleb Williams, J.J. McCarthy, just because we haven't seen anything from J.J. And we're hopeful about Caleb Williams. But I don't know that he's jumping the other two this year, even with Ben Johnson and his offense. I think if you're looking at it through a lens of the running back, the answer is different. I think that all of a sudden the Vikings might with former Packer running back might Aaron Jones. It could be that you're thinking, well, you know, Josh Jacobs had the best year last year. Jahmyr Gibbs and Montgomery are kind of a 1-2 punch. Then is it DeAndre Swift? And a seventh round. I think when you start with the offensive line, the quarterback, and you get to the running back, as far as receivers are concerned, I think the Bears, they as good as they are, they don't have Justin Jefferson. And I think that the Bears, as good as they are, they have yet to prove, and they have an Amon-Ra St. Brown. So I think DJ Moore probably fits in behind those other two guys. And is he the best receiver on the Bears?
That's a good argument,
right
though.
Now. And then you
Justin
look at,
Jefferson, there's no argument.
You look at Christian Watson. No, there's no argument.
He's the best.
After
that, it gets interesting.
Well, I think it's Amon-Ra St. Brown because he's made two consecutive
Pro
Bowls. I
know. He's a great system.
Ahead of DJ Moore.
How will he be without Ben Johnson?
Yeah, it's a great question.
And how much has he benefited from that offensive line,
David,
as you point out?
I totally agree with that, but I'm saying we have to judge this not by what the future may hold,
okay. But
by, you know, what is going on right now. And frankly, I would say the second best wide receiver is probably it's probably Jordan Addison. You know, I'm just saying he's probably ahead of Romeo Doubs, who is ahead of who is the Bears' second receiver. Are we gonna say it's Luther Burden, or are we saying
it's Rome?
It's Rome Odunze. Rome's done nothing thus far.
I agree with that.
No offense to anyone. And then, as far as your tight ends are concerned, you know, I know Sam Laporte is great. You know, T.J. Hockenson has had a really good run and he's done well for himself. So that's not as obvious. I think the Bears have a way to go. I think they're third, if I'm judging it right now, based on previous seasons. Now, you know, third with a bullet, right? Because they got the play caller from the first one. But that's the way I judge it. All right.